Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck, live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you can find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Welcome back to the show, as this is going to be a little bit of a shortened version. As we've got a Bulls game tonight against the 76ers. We had a great interview yesterday with Casey Johnson from the Chicago Tribune. So if you missed that, you should go back and listen to that. And our episode from Monday was a jam-packed, hour-filled episode, kind of catching up on all of the news from the weekend, too. So that was an excellent episode as well. So I suggest if you missed either one of those episodes, you go back and re-listen to those, because the interview was great and the other Monday episode was fantastic. But Matt, hey, how are you?
Doing well, Jordan. Looking forward to this Bulls-Sixers matchup we got on deck tonight. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, a couple of the league's rising stars. It'll be, you know, a good measuring stick to see what the young Bulls can do against Philly, who have been playing pretty well recently. The Sixers lost a tough one to Memphis on Monday, 105-101. But last week, they went 3-0, including victories over Toronto and Boston, the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, getting some strong games from both Embiid and Simmons in those wins. So a nice, juicy matchup that the Bulls have on deck tonight.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a good matchup in terms of just kind of understanding, seeing another young team. Obviously, the Bulls saw the 76ers about maybe close to a month ago, but it was a Joel Embiid-less 76ers team. And like you had said, this team is sort of rolling right now. They've won 7 of their last 9, including some pretty big wins over some top Eastern Conference teams right now. Like you had said, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Bucks, and they knocked off the Spurs, the Pistons, and the Nuggets in this win, sort of this win streak that they've had. But this is going to be an interesting matchup, I think, for one. One of the things that we did talk about on Monday was the Bulls' ability to rebound the ball. And the Philadelphia 76ers are the best rebounding team in the NBA right now. So, and that obviously is a lot of a testament to Joel Embiid and how dominant he's on the boards. So I'm going to be interested to see how Fred Hoiberg plays these matchups. Obviously, I think for most of the time that Joel Embiid's on the floor, you're probably going to see Robin Lopez out there. But I'd like to see it once Joel Embiid's not on the floor, maybe Fred Hoiberg switches up a little bit, goes to maybe a smaller ball lineup, trying to shoot the ball and spread the floor, something along the lines of a Nico and Lauri Markkanen sort of matchup. And we'll be able to see sort of what Jerian Grant can do coming off that Pelicans loss too. So I think there's a lot of interesting things to play here. You get to see another one of these young rising teams that I would think would be competitive. And you're sort of seeing now the future of the NBA sort of shift with some of these teams that have finally put all their young pieces together and are sort of trying to make that next step, at least into a competitive basketball team and learning to play together.
Yeah, and I'll be looking specifically at, obviously everybody's excited to see Embiid and Simmons play, one of the more exciting young duos in the league right now. But as far as where the Bulls can take advantage and try to get themselves a win tonight, to me, it's going to be, can the Bulls' second unit, which has really come on strong in the months of December and January, whether you're talking about the play of David Nwaba or Nico Mirotic's play off the bench, Bobby Portis, can they outperform the Sixers bench? Because this Sixers team is going to be shorthanded tonight. Jared Bayless, who's averaging 25 minutes per game for them, is out with a wrist injury, and TJ McConnell, another piece of their bench, out with some family matters he's attending to. So Sixers will be a little bit shorthanded tonight, kind of a recurring theme in this stretch of December and January games when the Bulls are inexplicably stacking up some wins. So can the Bulls bench have another strong game tonight, and who will be on the floor for the Bulls late in the fourth quarter if this game is a tight one? Because we're hearing that it's going to be another 24-minute night for Zach LaVine. And if he hits those 24 minutes by the time the fourth quarter rolls around, well, who's going to be out there playing?
Yeah, so that's going to be another thing to watch. Obviously, no Chris Dunn again tonight, and it doesn't seem like he's going to play in that Lakers game either. So hopefully this stretch of Chris Dunn being out, he returns. I know like this is like the worst timing for this to happen because, you know, he battled the injury with the finger early on in the season, came all the way back, built up all this confidence. It seems like he had hit his stride this season. And then this unfortunate injury, which, you know, he's lucky, honestly, and we didn't talk a whole lot about the injury when it happened, but man, he is so lucky that he just didn't bust all of the teeth out of his mouth because he fell from 10 feet straight on his face. And I thought that was one thing too, that I clearly thought that he was concussed after that fall. I mean, like, how could anybody not be? You're going full speed at the basket and then you just flop straight down on your face from 10 feet. So I'm hoping that this setback or this injury doesn't hold Chris Dunn out for too long and sort of messes up that stride that he had, all the strides that he had been taking this season so far. But another person that I want to talk about too is rookie point guard Markelle Fultz. I think this is one of the strangest stories in the NBA right now because he hasn't played since the second week of the season. They've held him out now for 3 months trying to work on his shot. He had an injury too. There was a lot of speculation that he was dealing with injuries coming out of the draft and that he might not have been fully healthy, but it seems like not only do the NBA fans not know what's going on and do 76ers fans not really understand what's going on with Markelle Fultz, but it seems like it's becoming like almost a overly frustrated situation for Philadelphia and their number one overall pick.
Yeah, and it's kind of a unfortunate recurring theme for them. I mean, I feel like everybody in Philly's loving what Ben Simmons and Embiid are doing right now, but those are guys who both got off to slow starts for their NBA careers. You know, this is essentially quote unquote Simmons' rookie year. This is the first, you know, last season we got our first real glimpse of Embiid, but both of those guys basically had false starts. And so now for another top tier lottery level pick in Philadelphia to be suffering the same slow start, kind of just, you know, tripping out of the gate, so to speak, it's got to be frustrating for that fan base because as much as Bulls fans may be frustrated halfway through year one of a rebuild, I mean, look what we're getting to see with Lauri Markkanen right away. Obviously, we didn't necessarily think he would win the starting job, and in training camp, Nico Mirotic did win that starting job, and then obviously the Nico Bobby stuff happened, and so Markkanen was thrust into the role and has earned himself proven himself to be a mainstay of that starting lineup. So it just goes to show you, you know, you never know what's going to happen, and you just have a little bit of sympathy for Sixers fans who have been kind of irrelevant in the great NBA landscape for so many years and trying to hashtag trust the process, as they say. They're just now kind of starting to turn a corner, but it's got to be a huge bummer for them that this road bump has happened with Fultz, another top tier lottery pick that has had this kind of problem right out of the gate.
I think that's one of the things to stress in terms of importance for young guys is half the battle's trying to just stay healthy. And you know, one little setback here or there, you've seen it over the course of some guys' careers where they struggle to come back or they're not the same type of player. So with the good fortune, and I'm knocking on every piece of wood in my house right now, with the ability for Lauri Markkanen to stay healthy, I know there's been some backs. There was some back spasm issues in December, but it seems like he's been all right now with the workload that Fred Hoiberg has been giving him. Same thing with Zach LaVine. I think that's the important part here too, to understand with LaVine, is the not wanting him to be rushed back in any situation or being overly worked. I mean, because realistically the Bulls they're not playing for a playoff spot here. It's more so just to see what's going on in terms of player developments, how guys are acting. And most of all, you want to see what Zach LaVine can do for you and make sure that he can stay healthy and that nothing sets him back by overextending him in this period. So I think for player development, for these young guys, especially to take a look at, you know, specifically the 76ers roster with all the injuries that they've had and the misfortune that they had, the young guys that are on the Bulls and having no health issues, I think is important to understand sort of the progression, and it helps rookies too. And I mean, you look at other teams around the league with young players that have continuously gotten hurt. And I think Markelle Fultz is an interesting spot. And like, everybody bagged Boston in the summer for trading that top pick for Jason Tatum. And you see how that worked out now. Jason Tatum looks like one of the best rookies in the league. And Markelle Fultz hasn't played, like I said, since the second week of the season. So it's just pretty interesting when you talk about young players and trying to get them to develop and keeping them healthy too. And I think that's been ever so important now into the NBA when teams are looking at trying to build around guys and sort of protecting their health and their assets on the floor.
Yeah, and you've seen that firsthand from the Bulls organization this season, whether it was being overly cautious with Markkanen's back spasms, being very cautious with how and when they brought Zach LaVine back. You know, we heard from Casey Johnson in our interview in yesterday's episode that he expects the Bulls to have a sit down with LaVine to sort of clear their plan to ramp up his minutes again, starting with probably next week's games. But, you know, they've been very cautious with him. And the guy we are also talking about, Chris Dunn, who's out tonight, most likely, almost certainly out Friday against the Lakers. I'd be surprised if they rush him back too, you know, and I don't rush him back. It's kind of an unfortunate situation because he had been playing so well and he was gaining a lot of confidence as the Bulls starting point guard for the duration of this streak in December and January, when they're winning some nice games and looking better and better. But hey, maybe they hold Dunn out a little bit longer than normal just to be extra careful and they drop a few games. Hey, maybe Campaign gets a minute off the bench and they drop a few more games.
All right, so before we get to this week in Bulls history, Matt, I want to quickly touch on a couple different things that kind of popped up with the Bulls real quick. First, Nico Mirotic. It seems like the Bulls are still set on the number one pick. A first round pick in terms of what they want to get back for him in value. It seems like now the consensus is that there might be more traction in a three-way trade than maybe a straight-up two-way trade. Some teams out there, obviously Utah's still in play. Maybe Cleveland for a three-way deal is possibly involved too. So if the Bulls want to ultimately get that first-round pick that they want for Nico, I think the consensus now is starting to turn more that they're going to have to bend a little bit on a player that they might get back. Maybe somebody like, if you're talking about the Jazz, you're going to have to take on a guy like Alec Burks, which we talked about, or if you're looking at Cavs in a three-way deal, you're going to have to take on a guy like
Schumbert.
Exactly. So it seems like the overwhelming consensus is that a three-way deal might be more possible than just a straight-up two-way deal for the Bulls to ultimately get what they want for Nico.
Yeah, and I mean, Cleveland, Tyronn Lue, after their most recent disappointing loss to San Antonio, really a depleted San Antonio team that was playing without a lot of key pieces. Hey, whoop-de-doo, LeBron got 30,000. Good for you congratulating yourself on Instagram while your team is crumbling and falling apart. You know, people are expecting the Cavs to do something at the deadline or before the deadline to try to fix this team and right the ship as they try to get back to the finals for an umpteenth consecutive season. Maybe there's something there that the Bulls can do in a three-way deal, taking on an unwanted contract like Schumpert. The Bulls front office has kind of been hinting at the fact that they would rather not do that. And we heard reports that they were not interested in taking on the remaining extra year on Alec Burks's deal from Utah and a potential deal sending Nico over to the Jazz. at some point, if you are determined to get that first round pick for Nico, you might. I mean, the Bulls have the cap flexibility to do it. They have more than enough cap space right now. They have an extra open roster spot. To me, it seems kind of like a no-brainer. If the thing that's holding you back from getting a first-round draft pick for Nico is maybe taking on one more year of an unwanted contract, and you have the cap space, and it's not like you're going to be luring big-name free agents in this summer anyway, then why not? Like, why not make that deal? So we'll see. I mean, obviously, the Cavs have two draft picks in play in the first round, their own and the one owed to them from Brooklyn. Obviously, I think it would shock everyone if they sent that Brooklyn pick anywhere. There is a stipulation where they're only allowed to trade one of the two. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe there's an outside chance that they would send the Bulls their own first round pick, which is somewhere, you know, right around 24th or 25th right now, according to tankathon.com. So something that, you know, that's the newest factor. I think it makes the most sense that the Bulls explored ideas for getting a first rounder for Nico in a, you know, in a two-team deal, and they exhausted those options. So now we've still got a couple weeks before the deadline. Let's see what they can come up with.
All right, real quick before we get to Bulls, this week in Bulls history, too, you wrote an article about Garpax and sort of how the fan base is feeling, and maybe some of the fan base that is a little bit hesitant on giving credit to the front office where credit is deserved. So I thought this was a really good read, and you brought up a lot of good points too, because for somebody who actively wanted the Bulls to tank for a long time, it's like now increasingly seeming like with them playing so well and the moves that the front office has made, I would say over the last 6 to 8 months, they do deserve a lot of credit for hitting on the trade for Jimmy Butler, or sending Jimmy Butler away for these three picks. And like, there's little deals and little moves too, I think, that they deserve some credit for. One being David Nwabo. Like, I feel like that one's kind of forgotten. It's kind of lost on some Bulls fans too. When we're talking about in terms of the way that this roster was constructed, evaluating talent and bringing in guys that maybe they were looking to get a better look at. So you kind of brought this up too, but I thought David Nwabo was another person that they should deserve a little bit of credit for. And we talked about it. They're a step ahead of a lot of other rebuilding teams who decided to rebuild, you know, when they decided to flip that switch. In year one, I look at around the league teams that decided to do this and go on a tank or sort of, I guess, rebuild. And this is more so a rebuild on the fly for the Chicago Bulls, maybe in terms of any other NBA team out there. But I think they deserve as much criticism as you and I have given them on shows in the past. They do deserve a lot of credit, and you can't play hypocrite in your own words. You can't play hypocrite when talking about the front office.
Yeah, that was kind of the main point of the column that I put up on LockedOnBulls.com yesterday, is that the biggest frustration Bulls fans have with the front office is the hypocrisies of how and why they explain the moves they make to their fan base. And a lot of it doesn't make sense, and a lot of it is contradictory within itself. So if Bulls fans get pissed off at Gar, Foreman, and John Paxson for saying things that are hypocritical, then you can't criticize them with criticisms that are in and of themselves also hypocritical. And so my biggest example of this in my column yesterday was, were you somebody who crushed the Bulls front office for the Jimmy Butler trade when it went down last summer? Did you think it was a terrible trade? Did you say, we got hosed, we lost that trade, we just gave away a top 15 player for a guy with a torn ACL, a busted rookie, and, you know, trading up in the lottery to take a guy who's probably going to be a European bust? Was that your take? Because, you know, be truthful, there were a lot of those takes out there when that trade went down. If you were one of the people who hated that trade and crushed the Bulls front office for that trade, saying we got crap in return for Jimmy Butler, and now fast forward to January of 2018, you are also crushing the front office for their inability to execute a tank successfully, that is hypocritical. Because in essence, you're saying, damn you, Bulls front office. The kids you got in the Jimmy Butler trade are better than you thought, better than we all thought, and because of that, we're winning too many games, and you're screwing up the tank. Don't do that. Don't do that. You have to give the front office some credit where it's due, and the Jimmy Butler trade right now is the biggest example of the Bulls front office doing something right. So if you're pissed off that they went on that winning streak in December and that they're winning games in January, and right now they're on the outside looking in as far as the number of ping pong balls in that Chicago draft lottery in 4 or 5 months, I'm sorry, but deal with it. That's what's happening. And it's a silver lining to the sense that we gave up on building a team around Jimmy Butler and started fresh. The pieces we got are better than we all expected. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And you can rag on the Bulls front office all you want, but it has to be justified and it can't be hypocritical.
Yeah. And one thing that I will point out to that too, is like being a Chicago Bulls fan, you're not cheering for the front office. Like, you're not fans of the front office. You're fans of what the team, what the product is on the floor. You're a fan of the team. So in that case, you should be cheering and you should be excited and thrilled that the Bulls have put pieces on this roster for once that finally fit the mold of what the Bulls want to do. What they've told us for the longest time is getting younger, more athletic. Like, we laughed about those things when they signed Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, and they tried to play this meddling sort of, let's make the playoffs, see what we can do by getting some of these guys that maybe can make an impact. It didn't work. They admitted that it didn't work. I think the one thing that people too, not just necessarily the trades or the moves that they made, I think the one thing that I had the biggest problem with, and it seems like they fixed that, and the biggest problem that I had with them was not being transparent with the fan base and sort of playing this condescending sort of tone with the fan base and making fans feel like they were stupid or had no idea what was going on or didn't really know. And I mean, to Garpax's credit, you can kind of say that they were right, because they made this move on Butler. They picked up Nwaba. They made a couple other moves that seemed now in hindsight like they were great moves, and it's exactly what the team needed. But I think that's the biggest thing and you can go with any team in any sport too. If a front office if a management of a professional organization isn't transparent with their fan base and isn't sort of all on board together, it fragments the fan base. And we saw that for the longest time. But I think now with roles reversed a little bit, with Gar Forman sort of taking a step away from the media, is taking a step away from talking from people, John Paxson sort of being on the forefront of these conversations and this team, I think it's helped Bulls fans sort of understand and be able to forget some of the bad moves that the Bulls made over the past 2-3 years. And it seems like the Bulls front office, or John Paxson at least, is trying to be a little bit more transparent. And the things that he's been saying to the media publicly have all been true. I mean, like, you can go back and check the records on things that he said and whether or not they turned out to be true or they were moves that they wanted to make after they decided to flip the switch on this team. They've been pretty transparent, so I've got to give them credit for that, because that was the biggest thing that I had the biggest problem with, was the fact that they weren't transparent. And that was my frustration with the White Sox for the longest time, is that the front office and the management wasn't transparent with the fan base. They hadn't picked the direction. They finally did, and now things seem to be maybe taking that turn, which is good, and they do deserve credit.
Yeah, and it's the same reason that Bears fans here in Chicago eventually got sick of John Fox. It's the smoke screens and it's the BS, whether it's the front office or the coaching staff. When you know you're being lied to, and the person lying to you as a fan base is unapologetic and treats you like you're stupid and thinks that you're going to swallow the shit that they're shoveling, pardon my French, it's really insulting and it's really frustrating. And when the front office is, as you said, starting to become a bit more transparent, specifically John Paxson, between that and the fact that maybe, you know, this rebuild is ahead of schedule, and that's not a bad thing, you have to give credit, some credit, where it's due. All right, Jordan, let's get to our Bulls history segment. We missed out on that yesterday because we had Casey Johnson on. Before we get to This Week in Bulls History, though, I want to talk to our Locked On Bulls listeners about draft. Guess what? It's Draft Wednesday. That means fantasy basketball. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary sites? That's why Draft is our favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me and Jordan. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft and are loving it. You can play in a real live NBA draft right now. You'll be done in under 5 minutes, get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, including ours. We already have ours set up today. It's the Locked On Bulls January 24th draft. You can come and play with us for just $5. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code LOBULLS. That's right, you can play in a real money draft for free just by using the promo code LOBULLS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Bulls listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com now. You can play for free with me and Jordan for the Locked On Bulls draft. Just use the promo code LOBULLS.
All right, so this week in Bulls history, Matt, I've got a really good one, and it's relatively recent. And so I've been waiting for a few weeks now because I knew it was coming up. I didn't remember exactly what date it was, but I'm glad it started this week because it's very, very fresh in Bulls fans' mind. So I'm going back to as recent as last calendar year, this week, January 25th, 2017, when the Bulls blew a 10-point lead to the Atlanta Hawks, which spurred a bunch of new headlines for the Chicago Bulls in last year's roller coaster of a season. Obviously, if you can remember back to this game, what I'm talking about is Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade combined for 73 points in this game. 73 points. And the Bulls blew a 10-point lead against the Atlanta Hawks and ended up losing 119 to 114.
And this then they combined to run their mouths in the locker room after the game.
Exactly. And so this was the game where Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade did the whole shower stint where they were, you know, they came out of the shower together. They had sort of a planned meaning of what they wanted to say to the press. And this is where we saw the fraction of the locker room happen. And then,
you know, with a team to be in these kind of situations, lose games like this, you know, when everyone don't care enough. You got to care enough, man. You know, you got to mean that much to you to want to win, and it doesn't. So I don't know. You know, I don't know what happened. I don't know how you fix it. It just doesn't mean enough for guys around here to want to win ball games, and you know, it pisses me off. But I can't be frustrated, and I can't care too much for these guys. They got to care for themselves. So. We got to do better as individuals. Guys got to look at themselves in the mirror and see, do you really care enough? Are you putting everything into this for your teammates and for yourself? I would say no, but guys have to look themselves in the mirror and see if they're doing that right. You know, but I don't know if it hurts enough. You know, games like this are supposed to hurt you. You know, you weren't supposed to sleep. You weren't supposed to want to talk to nobody. These games are supposed to hurt. But I don't know if that is in the guys in this locker room. Man, hopefully they can prove me wrong, but you know, I will, you know, challenge them to see if losses like this, you know, hurt. We can play bad, we can miss shots, but you know, we haven't too many of these lapses. We haven't too many of these losses. And this just can't be acceptable if you, you know, want to do something besides, you know, have a NBA jersey on and make some money. You know, and that's all we're doing around here.
This spurred the Rajon Rondo Instagram post that these were headlines for the next 2 weeks in the NBA, talking about the fragmentation of the Bulls locker room, what's going on in Chicago. So I thought this was an important turning point in the Chicago Bulls season last year, with all the ups and downs that the Bulls had and sort of trying to figure out whether or not this was still at that point. We're trying to figure out whether or not Jimmy Butler was the guy of the future and was whether or not the Bulls wanted to build around him and use him as their star. And I think this move in general, and we talked about it in our review in 2017 as one of the biggest moments in the Bulls in 2017. I thought the move by them was, you know, it is what it was. And I thought for a lot of what happened with Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler, especially towards the end, you kind of saw a lot of what Dwayne Wade's mentorship was rubbing off on Jimmy Butler. And I'm not saying necessarily all the positives were rubbing off on him either, but this was certainly a historic moment in Bulls history. And I can tell you, I'll remember this for a while. And I know this is going to be something I tell people, you know, 3-5 years down the road, maybe when the Bulls are competitive again. It's like, oh yeah, remember that season where Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade were in Chicago and they had the whole Instagram social media locker room blowout. So I had to bring this up though, because this is really an important part of the Bulls history.
I mean, it was the moment last season that it was the defining moment of, hey guys, you know how you try that whole three alphas thing? Yeah, that crashed and burned, and it was a terrible idea from the start.
Doing what we wanted to do, whatever we wanted to do. Lost. story of our year over and over again, same thing. It's not the first time you've seen it. It's not the first time we've seen it. It's not the first time we've done it.
Fred Hoiberg could not handle the egos of those guys in the locker room. Jimmy Butler, his ego was growing and doubling by the day. At that point, he was separating himself from the team. Like, he would dress away from his teammates in the locker room. He would shoot by himself and shoot arounds. Dwayne Wade was leaving the team, you know, once every other week to go hang out with his family and friends in Florida. He wasn't practicing with the team. He wasn't ever playing defense with the team. And the one guy, the guy who got benched by Hoiberg, the guy who got chewed out, the guy who got in a fight with associate head coach Jim Boylan early in the season, the guy who's always had that negative reputation for being a troublemaker, Rajon Rondo, is the one who came out of that whole conundrum looking like a good leader, looking like a guy who knew what he was talking about, and a guy who was willing to stand up for the young guys on that Bulls roster. But it was the defining moment of a season that was a giant mess. It was entertaining to watch all that go down. But at that point, I was thinking, my God, this season can't end soon enough.
One thing about this too, this is the point where I gained a lot of respect for Rajon Rondo. I was not a fan of him, you know, previously, and that might have just been my ignorance of not knowing really the person he was or the type of person. You know, you got all the chatter about how he was a locker room cancer and what happened in Sacramento or even in Boston or some of the other teams that he had bounced around to. I mean, even in Dallas too, he had some frustrations. But this is really where I gained a lot of respect for Rajon Rondo. And I remember saying it last season when the Bulls decided not to bring him back. I said, you know, it wouldn't, if the Bulls didn't decide to trade Jimmy Butler and they were going to run it back again, I said, you know what? I didn't really have a problem with bringing Rajon Rondo back just because it seemed like he gathered the young guys, got them to buy in and play collectively together. And it was more of Butler and Wade sort of separating that locker room. And I can't really blame Butler and Wade for it, like in hindsight a little bit, because you think about it, they were trying to figure out what was going on with this team. Butler had sort of a power struggle. He's trying to figure out how to be that leader for the first time ever. And so you can kind of understand it from all their perspectives, but I gained a ton of respect for Rajon Rondo, the person, and somebody who was touted as a locker room cancer for the longest time. He played pretty much the opposite of that when he was with the Chicago Bulls for a year.
Yeah. And it's not a coincidence that everybody on that Bulls team who was not Jimmy Butler or Dwayne Wade said Rajon Rondo is the greatest teammate I've ever played with. Bobby Portis said that on record. Denzel Valentine said that on record. Nico Mirotic, just, you know, chatting with the media earlier this week leading up to the game against the Pelicans when they were facing his old teammate Rajon Rondo, said hands down best teammate I've ever played with. And we all know that Nico never got along with Jimmy Butler. Butler bragged on him, made fun of him, criticized him in front of the whole team. And, you know, that was always a problem for Nico, who's, you know, kind of a softy. But Rondo, to his credit, everyone on that Bulls team last season said, Rondo's the best guy, the best teammate I've ever played with. And if everybody says that, it's not BS. It's true. All right, I got one quick one, and then we'll move on to take a couple mailbag questions. This one just kind of noteworthy, not because the game was all that great, but because of its historic significance. January 24th, 2003. You know what that date means, Jordan? The final game that Michael Jordan will ever play in an NBA jersey in a Chicago stadium.
From North Carolina, Edgar 6'6", Michael Jordan.
Thank you. It's truly been a pleasure. You guys have given me great pleasure to play here in the city of Chicago. My heart will always be here in Chicago. I love y'all. Still support the Chicago Bulls. Thank you for support over the years. I love y'all. Thank you very much.
Bulls and Wizards at the United Center. The Bulls win 104-97. There was a moment before the game where the United Center crowd, of course, a sold out crowd to witness the last game. Everybody knew it was the last game. Everybody knew Jordan was done after that year with his stint with the Wizards. A standing ovation that lasted multiple minutes. And then Jordan did eventually take the mic for a second. We'll tweet out that video from our Locked On Bulls Twitter account at Locked On Bulls later this afternoon. Jordan, a fairly pedestrian 11 points on 4 of 14 shooting. But I was just looking at the box score of this game on Basketball Reference this morning, and it's just funny to look at the rosters of these two teams when this crazy, you know, this crazy important thing happened in the world of Chicago sports history, MJ's last game in Chicago. For the Wizards, you got Stackhouse, Larry Hughes, MJ, Brendan Haywood, and MJ's old dream team teammate Christian Laettner in the starting lineup. Stackhouse dropped 23, Laettner 21 in this game. On the bench, current Cavs coach Ty Lue, Michael Jordan's biggest, most hilarious and famous bust as a front office member of the Wizards, Kwame Brown. MJ's old Bulls teammate Charles Oakley was on that Wizards team in the early 2000s.
Wow.
And Bobby Simmons. And then you look at the Bulls roster from this season: Jalen Rose, Donyell Marshall, Trenton Hassell, Crawford, and Tyson Chandler in the starting five. Rick Brunson, Eddie Robinson, Marcus Fizer, Corey Blount, Eddie Curry, and current head coach Fred Hoiberg coming off the bench for 5 minutes. Hoiberg was a +9 in that game, scoring 0 points.
Wow, that's pretty funny, honestly.
Like those two rosters are hilarious.
That Wizards roster sounds like if you put that and stuck that back in college, like that sounds like an all-time college. Like that could be a team that could win an NCAA championship. And like, yeah, it just, for whatever reason, it didn't translate to the NBA for a lot of those guys. Was that, I wonder if that was when Tyronn Lue still was rocking the cornrows too.
Oh, it absolutely was.
Well, that's pretty funny. Like, that's crazy that, you know, a Michael Jordan team with guys like Christian Laettner and Brandon Haywood and even Jerry Stackhouse, like such an odd roster and such an odd formation and for a team. And like, you look back on that and now you're like, oh. And I also look back at some of these games too, and I think it's funny the way the NBA shifted, even from the early 2000s, with the minutes that guys play in. The I guess the crutch that a lot of the top six, the top seven players in your team had to hold, like in the new style of NBA, I feel like rotations now are what, 9-10 guys that are at least getting 15 minutes a night. Like most rosters are playing in that way. And back then even back in the early 2000s, it was still guys with, you know, 6-7 guys on that roster that were playing 30 plus minutes a night. And it was other guys that were coming in to scrape up at the end of the fourth quarter if it was a blowout or the lead had gotten away from them.
Yeah. And look, this is not a game that went to overtime. This is a 48 minute basketball game. Coming into this game, the Bulls were 16-26. The Wizards were 21-22. So these are not teams, these are not playoff teams. These are not teams who in the middle of January are thinking, wow, this is an important game. Stackhouse played 45 minutes. Larry Hughes played 42. Jordan, age 8 million, played 39 minutes. Laettner, 36. For the Bulls, Jalen Rose played 43 minutes. 43 minutes in a meaningless game between two bad teams. Like, that's insane.
That's pretty funny. All right. Let's get to some mailbag questions now as we wrapped up this week in Bulls history with two very interesting games. Like Matt said, we'll tweet out those videos for you guys as well on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. And we'll post them on Facebook too. If you don't like using Twitter, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Real quick, before we get to mailbag though, I want to remind all of you about our giveaway going on right now. We're giving away two tickets, a ticket for you and a guest to join Matt and I at the Timberwolves Bulls game on February 9, 2017, as Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson, for the first time since they were traded, returned back to the United Center. I can imagine this is going to be a sold out game, probably going to be the most packed the United Center has been maybe since that Golden State game. This game's on a Friday night too, so I imagine the United Center is going to be electric. It's going to be a lot of fun. And so all you have to do is go to iTunes, submit a review on Locked On Bulls, screenshot that review and email it to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. It's that simple. Takes you 30 seconds to do. It helps us out. It helps you out. You could have a potential chance to join us and see Jimmy Butler and Tom Thibodeau and Taj Gibson. It's going to be a great night, and we'd love to have you out there. So go ahead and submit that iTunes review for us. We haven't set a date on when we're going to end this, but we'll figure something out sometime later this week on when that cutoff is and when we decide on a winner. So that's probably going to come sometime next week. So you still have plenty of opportunity to do that coming through this weekend, but make sure you get that to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com.
Boom. All right. I'll kick us off, Jordan. This question comes from Danny on Twitter. With many players being unhappy with the teams they're in, such as Kawhi Leonard, Damian Lillard, etc., do you see the Bulls trading away the lottery pick for a star and sign a big free agent? Leonard, Cousins, If the Bulls started playing this way, they'd be in the playoffs. Thanks for the question, Danny. First of all, Damian Lillard doesn't want out of Portland. He actually tweeted something himself just earlier this week because of all the noise. Look, yeah, he requested to have a sit down with the Blazers front office to talk about what the plan is. But he's, you know, somebody said something about like, you know, Dame Lillard's going to be in Portland for the long haul. And he quoted it and tweeted and said like, that's, you know, that's damn right. Or 100% right. Something like that, something to that effect. So I don't think Lillard actually wants out of Portland. Leonard in San Antonio to me is also iffy. Like he denied, people in his camp denied those reports that came from ESPN that there's a rift between him and the Spurs front office and the way that they've handled his rehab process as he's been injured most of this season. To me, you know, maybe there's some truth to him being frustrated with the Spurs' inability to land the big name free agents. You know, they got Aldridge, they got Powell, but maybe he feels like he needs another dynamite star for the Spurs to really be competing upper echelon with Houston, with Golden State for as long as those teams are together. But I think it's irrelevant. I think it's all a moot point because I don't think that that makes sense for the Bulls to trade away a lottery pick and to try to land a big name free agent, whether it's Kawhi Leonard, whether it's Cousins, as Danny asks us. I really don't think that that's part of their plan. The rebuild might be further along than we all thought halfway through season one of the rebuild, but it doesn't mean the Bulls are going to go out and try and spend a big money on a free agent this summer. I really don't see that happening. What about you, Jordan?
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. And I thought it was funny. Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1002 had this conversation about DeMarcus Cousins. I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yeah, they put a poll out on Twitter.
And they asked,
I was like, I voted no. And can I vote no 1,000 times more?
They asked Bulls fans if they would like to have DeMarcus Cousins on this team. Would you want him if you could have him? And like, it's realistic. The Bulls could have him. Like, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. Like, if the Bulls really wanted to go out and give him max money, they could do that. They certainly could do that. That's not out of the realm of possibility. But is it realistic for the path that the Bulls are taking right now? Absolutely not. So that's why, like, especially trading away draft picks, like, that was the one thing that, like, we're talking about. If we're going to hold the front office to what they're saying to the media, especially after that flip, and for the most part, everything that they've said has been true, I'm going to go with giving them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and understanding that they don't want to trade away any of those picks. They understand how valuable draft picks are and to land young talent in the, you know, in the draft. So to go out and get a star right now, this offseason, it doesn't seem like the Bulls are ready to do that. Maybe a year from now, with another year under Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and whoever else you've got on this roster, plus your draft pick, another year underneath their belts, then maybe they take another small step next season, and maybe then you're ready to sign a big-time free agent. And that's when I think the Bulls are sort of looking for it. And that's why I talked about, when we were talking about free agent signings, like an early free agent look, I said the Bulls got to be savvy what they're going to do in free agency. Like, they're one of the few teams that has a boatload of money to spend this offseason. But do you really want the Bulls to tie themselves up in a market where a whole lot of teams can't spend a lot of money? I don't think so. So that's why, like, there was even names thrown out there like Jabari Parker too. What are the odds of the Bulls would sign him? And would the Bucks end up matching a big deal? Would the Bulls, you know, offer him something around $70 million for 4 years? I'm like, no. Let's not tie your money up into a guy that's had two ACL injuries already. Like, I get this, the hometown story in Jabari Parker, and he was great, but I don't know if I trust it yet to throw a ton of money at Jabari Parker, which he's probably going to command when he goes into restricted free agency this summer. You know, to tie all that money up, and the constant talk about the Bulls having the flexibility to, if they are going to pitch a guy and use Zach LaVine to pitch a superstar that can be added to this roster and all of a sudden turn, you know, take that giant leap forward to becoming a competitive team. Tying your money up in free agency isn't the plan, I think, for this summer. And same thing with trading for a big time star, at least in the immediate future. Maybe if we're talking about a year from now, that might be a move that the Bulls want to make, but I don't see any possibility of that happening anytime soon.
Yeah. And just one more final thing on Cousins, because not only has he come up recently, and obviously, you know, when he put that smackdown on the Bulls earlier this week, when you put up a 40-20-10 line against, you know, against the Bulls, Bulls fans are going to be like, oh, wouldn't mind having that guy. But this is not the first time that Bulls, Cousins to the Bulls rumors have been around for a couple of seasons now. To me, yes, the guy is an insane talent, but and you know, some people might say, oh, you know, you're being silly. It's stupid to worry about this kind of stuff. It's not that big of a deal in the grand scheme. We saw what Fred Hoiberg could do, or better yet, couldn't do, dealing with big egos and, you know, mental issues with star players in his locker room last season and the season prior, whether it was Rose, Joakim, Powell, or the three alphas last year. Hopefully he'll get better at that as the Bulls' young core hopefully also turn into stars themselves. But right now he's not very good at that. And DeMarcus Cousins, along with Draymond Green, what is there a bigger head case in the NBA right now? Yes, the guy can ball his face off, but I'm sorry, the mental fragility, the mental instability that I see far too often from Boogie Cousins, I do not want that in my Bulls locker room. No, thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm glad you brought that up, because let's take it one step at a time here. You know, finally, Fred Hoiberg is seeming to, we praised him with Casey Johnson and he deserves a lot of credit as well. Like, let's take it one step at a time. Fred Hoiberg is finally having success by getting young guys to buy in and being able to play the way he wants to. And you saw the power struggle that he had with Butler and Wade and Rondo and et cetera and et cetera. But that's not to say that, you know, 2-3 years down the road, you know, 2 years down the road, when the Bulls, maybe the Bulls are taking that step and Fred Hoiberg has seemingly found a way to command that locker room and make those strides that he needs to make, maybe then you test it out with another star to come in. But for right now, I think you just don't mess with the chemistry that Fred Hoiberg's got these guys playing under and developing these young guys. And that's also another thing. You don't want to stunt the growth of the young guys too by limiting their minutes or changing up the style of the play that they want to play right now and are learning how to play, for the most part, a lot of these young guys, by bringing in a star and kind of wedging that gap. So yeah, like you said, that's one of Fred Hoiberg's biggest weaknesses right now, but that doesn't mean he can't change that or things can't change just because it didn't work out with one or two guys early on in his NBA tenure. You know, he was still trying to figure out how to deal with guys like that, because let's be honest, in college, you don't deal with guys like that. Like you're a college program and a professional program is so completely different the way guys act. And, you know, there's money involved and there's power and there's ego. So, you know, Fred Hoiberg can develop a relationship with a star. I still believe that. And it seems like these young guys have all bought into what he likes to do too. So maybe that'll help convince a star to be able to find and work out a relationship with Fred Hoiberg if they do decide, in fact, to bring him in. So yeah, there's a learning curve with Fred Hoiberg too, as well as we talk about all the young talent on the Bulls too. So there's also a learning curve for Fred Hoiberg as well. All right, one last mailbag question here as we wrap up. This one comes from Asish, and we talked about this a little bit, but I want to bring it back up because it seems like the Lakers, they're more interested in moving guys now, more than ever. So he says, what do you think about Julius Randle's fit next to Lauri Markkanen? Lakers want to get rid of him. What about a trade which would involve him and Nico Mirotic? He's a tough guy, a bit undersized, but center, but could be really strong for the Bulls. I talked about this and I'll start and close this with simply that I don't feel like a guy like Julius Randle fits into what the Bulls are really trying to do right now, and that's play pace and space, move the ball, tons of possessions, shoot the three. Like, to me, Julius Randle doesn't really fit that mold. Yeah, he's a strong guy that'll eat boards and, you know, can score points for you, but I feel like you sort of already have a guy that's like Julius Randle and Bobby Portis. Am I wrong on saying that?
Yeah.
And so
you're adding that to
this roster, and then you're giving up Nico Mirotic, and they don't want a young player in return. They want that first round pick. So I'll close the door by saying that I don't think that's really a fit for the Bulls, unless the Lakers are really trying to get rid of Randle and they want to dump one of those terrible contracts in the end of their bench and then attach maybe a pick in the future to it. But I just don't see any of that happening. And I don't really like, it's not to say I don't like Julius Randle's game. It's just, I don't see a fit with the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, I agree, Jordan, 100%. Don't see it as a fit. All right, last one real quick before we get out of here. This one, it made me laugh out loud when I read it, so I want to give it a second's attention. Big Ball and Bulls fan Kalo on Twitter asks, who would win in a street fight, 1 David Nwaba or 5 Cameron Paynes?
Ooh.
So 1 Nwaba versus 5 Cam Paynes in a street fight. Who you got?
Oh, man. David Nwaba that would be one guy, like, outside of Bobby Portis, I think that's one guy I would never want to meet in an alley. Like, he is, like, just his toughness and what he shows on the court, like, I don't know. I feel like that would translate into a fight, and he's strong. He's quick. He's short. He's fast. Like, I don't know. Maybe I might take David Nwaba over the 5 Cameron Paynes. Like, I don't, we bag on Cameron Payne all the time, and he's literally the center of jokes for Chicago Bulls fans. But like, 5 Cameron Paynes, 1 David Nwaba, I'm probably going to go ahead and take David Nwaba. I mean, if we're talking about a dance competition, then Cameron Payne can go on tour with the 5 Cameron Paynes.
That was my initial thought. So 1 David Nwaba versus 5 Cam Paynes, I'm taking David Nwaba hands down. I mean, the guy's got limbs on limbs on limbs with his quickness and his defensive agility. However, if we're talking about a Zoolander situation where they're breakdance fighting, I might have to give the edge to 5 breakdance fighting campaigns, but that is the only scenario that I would take 5 campaigns over David Nwaba.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app tomorrow. That's Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show anywhere you find podcasts, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. If you want a chance to win tickets to see the return of Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson at the United Center, along with their friend and coach Tom Thibodeau, all you have to do is go to iTunes, leave us a review, screenshot that review, and send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com. The game is on February 9th, 2018, so you'll be able to join Matt and I at the game with you and a guest. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be a great game. It's going to be a sold-out show. So for 30 seconds of your time, screenshot that review and send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com. But for Matt and Jordan, enjoy the Sixers-Bulls game tonight. We are out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.